Hello, everybody, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I am your host, Brad Whipple. So excited for all of you to be joining us today because we are having an Afra-filled episode. We have had yet to talk about this character on the podcast, so we're going to be discussing her as well as the recent audiobook by Sarah Kuhn. So I'm so excited. Joining me today on the show, back on Friends of the Force since October when we did our Black Spire review. It's been a long, long time. Or actually, no, you were in the Project Luminous episode, so it's only been a couple months. Time doesn't make sense anymore since COVID.
It feels like a lot longer than that.
I think you're on before the world, you know, hit the fan, whatever.
Right before, yeah. There you go.
Meg Dowell from Utini. Meg, welcome back to the show. How's it going today?
It's good. I'm good. Everything's great.
I'm so excited to have you back. Yeah, this is great. And joining Friends of the Force for the first time from Tashi Station is Bria LaVornia. Bria, how's it going today?
Pretty good. Everything's fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
Doing okay. I'm super excited to have you on the show, especially because I know how big of an Afra fan you are. So I figured, why not bring the expert into the room for this conversation? Because this character, I don't know about all of you, but after I did this audiobook and reading some of the comic books at the same time, I have just such a newfound appreciation for her. Not that I didn't before, but it kind of reached a peak level that I didn't anticipate. And it pleasantly surprised me in such a great way. So I'm really excited to talk about that. But before we get started, Bria, did you want to give a little introduction to yourself? If you would like, since you're new to the podcast, kind of like what you're kind of where you are in the Star Wars community, how you're involved.
I'm so bad at these things, but let's just go with one time someone called me a noted Dr. Afra scholar on Twitter, and it was my favorite description ever. So I'm just going to be like, Afra scholar. That's me.
That's the best kind of compliment, honestly.
Yeah, right. Actually, I use it in my bio on my website because it just cracked me up, and I'm like, yes, this is me. Aside from that, I, like you said, I do some writing stuff over at Tashi Station, including hosting a podcast over there called the Kanji Cast. I am also a freelance writer, so if you have seen my work on StarWars.com, that's me, obviously, that has my name on it. I did a whole bunch of comic stuff for them a couple of years ago, and I think the most recent piece I did was about Red Squadron and Rogue Squadron. And then I've also done some work for Marvel on their Age of Republic.
Age of Republic, yes. Yeah, so you wrote the Padme.
Yeah, I wrote Dooku and Padme, and yes. Then I did Age of Rebellion, I did Leia and all the villains, and then for Age of Resistance, I wrote the essays for Poe, Rey, Rose, and Hux.
Oh, that so. Rose issue, wow. That was yeah. That was an issue. That was great. We love Rose on Friends of the Force, so ooh, you're in good
too.
Company. Oh, yes, the Automach, you're wearing it. Love it.
Yeah. And they let me go full emotional Asian girl on that Rose essay. So I was really excited about that.
Seriously, she's just one of the best characters in Star Wars, hands down. There's just no question. You know, speaking of one other great Star Wars character that we're talking about today, it's Dr. Afra. So again, last month, the new audio drama from Sarah Kuhn and Del Rey Publishing, Dr. Afra, it was an adaptation of all of the old Darth Vader comics, which started with Darth Vader number 3. Almost 5 years ago, which is kind of hard to believe. It's been that long since we were first introduced to this character, but she continued on in the series written by Kieran Gillen. And later, Simon Spurrier took over, and now Alyssa Wong is doing her run of Afra that takes place post Empire Strikes Back. So we've been pretty inundated with this character for a couple of years now, and it was really exciting to get this audiobook just after Dooku Jedi Lost last year. So I like this trend. I think we should keep doing these. And we're going to talk about so much the hilarity of this book and the drama and the production quality. There's just so much to it that is great. But Meg, let's start with you. With Afra, the character going into this book, like, you know, how did you feel about her? How excited were you to finally explore, kind of re-explore this time period of her life, but also get some new introductions and new scenes and some new stuff involved with it?
So my introduction to her was actually only a few years ago when I started reviewing the Afra series that was going on at the time. I started reading it in the middle because I guess that's just what you do sometimes. eventually went back and read the rest of it. Still haven't read the Darth Vader series that she premiered in. Probably should do that at some point because I hear it's pretty good. And now I know, you know, some of the story. But I loved her from the moment that I first from like the first panel that I saw her in. I was like, I really like this character. She is wild and reckless and chaotic, and I relate to that a lot. So, you know, see myself in her a little bit. So
I love the chaotic elements of Aphra. I feel like we can all see a little bit of ourselves in there. You know, we've all been there, and she is just pure like a ball of chaos.
Exactly.
And I love that. Bria, what has been your experience with Dr. Aphra when you were first introduced to her and hearing about this audiobook that would be coming out?
So I remember when we first saw the cover for Vader number 3, and that was in December. I think the issue came out in March or something like that. And I saw it and I was like, oh my God, that's a badass looking Asian lady. I love her. And then I told myself, no, like, be calm. Like, you can't, don't start making a costume until you know you like her. And then by about 3 issues, like that, at the end of that first arc, I was like, okay, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
So I've loved getting to see her. Like you guys said, she's basically chaos incarnate. She is, and this audiobook really drives home the disaster lesbian that Star Wars needed. I think that the best thing about the audiobook is that Sarah was able to take the story, her story in the Vader comic, expand upon it, and then also show us more of everything Aphra, really. And we finally got to see Aphra and Zana's relationship as like when it was actually happening and not seeing it, or the remnants of it, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the most unique aspects of this book that I was really surprised by, and kind of the framing device of the whole story was something I didn't expect, but also really loved. And I don't think I've shipped harder than I've shipped by the end of this book. And I really want this to happen on screen now, really. And yeah, no, she's such an amazing character. And for you with your cosplay, like, you do amazing Aphra cosplay. Like, I just want to ask, like, how much has gone into that? I'm sure you spent tireless amounts of hours putting that costume together. And like, what has been, have you gotten to go to Celebration with that costume? And like, has that been like?
I have not put as much effort or time into the costume as I have something like my Iron Versio. And that's just because armor will always take more time than something that is mostly soft parts.
Mm-hmm.
Aphra, I think I started working on her, and somewhere in the depths of the internet, there are pictures of my V1 of the costume. And then everything just got upgraded and upgraded and upgraded till we got to the point where you can see how the costume is now. But to be perfectly honest, a lot of it is fairly simple because those are gray jeans that I wear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a polo that I dyed. Now obviously the holster and the aviator cap were a bit more effort, but it was definitely some work to get to the point where I could go to the 501st and get it approved. So I'm actually I was the first Aphra approved in the 501st Legion.
Nice.
Yeah. And then as far as Celebration goes, I've been to the last 2 dresses Aphra, and the one in Orlando was really fun actually, because I was walking around at one point with Heather Antos, who was the assistant editor on the Darth Vader comics and at the start of the Aphra run. And people would like ask to take my picture, and she'd be like the one offering to take it. And every now and then I'd be like, she actually works on these books. Like, I'm really glad you love the character, but also like here. So it's been really cool, especially as you've been seeing more and more people who want to dress as Aphra. There's definitely a growing community of us. And I would say, especially those of us who are Asian tend to find each other and just kind of like have this little support network going, where we're all sort of cheering each other on. But it's cool. Like, I always get really excited when I see another Aphra cosplayer because, yeah, she's probably one of the book characters that's more well known, mm-hmm. but she's not mainstream yet.
Yeah. And I think she's on her way there, honestly. I really do. And I think I almost in some ways think this book is a setup for what's to come for Aphra. I feel like there's such untapped potential. I feel like there are probably some really good fan casts out there that I haven't heard about just yet, but to see her, maybe if she can somehow be involved in a future series. We'll talk about that towards the end of the episode, like where we would like to see her character go. But this book really is just so special. And even though, again, it was a retelling of the comics, it did something really unique and really, really creative in a way. And, you know, huge props to Sarah Kuhn for doing that. But let's talk about our overall thoughts on it. You know, I, for one, thought this book was, the production quality was amazing. The sound editing is incredible. Everything just blended so well together. The humor is just so on point. Emily Zu Weller, just completely nailed Aphra's voice, and I can no longer think, like, her voice is now everything I read about Aphra. I read the Alyssa Wong comics now, and I hear Emily's voice, and that's really cool to finally give life to that character, and it's not just your own voice anymore. It's somebody's interpretation, and somebody's brilliant interpretation at that. And just the cast of characters played by Mark Thompson is really great. Darth Vader, I think he did a great job doing that, and just seeing more of that dynamic, them actually bantering back and forth versus reading it in a comic book, and some of the dramatic pauses Vader has when Aphra just blurts out the most ridiculous things. But there's just so much layered in this book. Meg, what are your overall thoughts on the audio drama?
I love it. Production quality is fantastic, especially considering the fact that they recorded it while in quarantine.
True.
You wouldn't know, but that happened. You know what? It's Dooku Jedi Lost was amazing, and this is so many steps above that, and it's so great. It's funny. It's so well written. Even if you're not like a huge audio person, you know, there are people who don't really like listening to podcasts and can't listen to fiction because they can't pay attention. That's fine. Even if, you know, you're not like a usual listener, it's worth it for the writing because it is so beautiful at points and so funny and so intense. I listened to the whole thing in like half a day. Couldn't stop. Like, I had other things to do and my brain was like, nope, you have to consume this entire story in one sitting. But it was so worth it. It's just, you know, it's heartbreaking and it's fun. And it's, you know, I can't remember before listening to this the last time that I laughed out loud listening to something. I listened to a lot of audiobooks and I was just like by myself laughing. So, you know, it's, I am not familiar with the story that was told. So for me, it was the first time, you know, experiencing it. So there was that aspect too. But it's, I've listened to it, I think, 3 times now because it's just,
wow.
You and the other thing is, some of the jokes and some of the little things go by so fast that you miss them like the first time. And so I'm rediscovering like little things as I listen to it again. I really, really liked it, in case you couldn't tell.
Yeah. I think as soon as I started it, I was like, this is not something I'm going to be able to put down. And it's true. I want to get a poll here. What are your guys' preference on do you change the timer at which you listen to the audiobook? Do you do like 1.5 times? Do you do any of that? I did like 1.25. It was a little strange. I sped up the book a little bit because I was trying to speed read it as fast as I could. But yeah, it's kind of a weird preference that I have sometimes. But it still was just as good, I promise. Don't listen to it at double speed though. I tried it for 5 minutes and it was like really it was even more chaotic. It's just, I would not recommend.
There's enough chaos.
I listen to audiobooks at 2.5 speed because I don't have time for things. So I'm used to it already. And the auto drama is fine for me, except for the one thing was Vader's breathing is super sped up because, you know, every scene he's in is so much more intense. Because it sounds like he's just breathing so heavily the whole time. But it was awesome. I actually kind of loved it. So
I'm picturing this in my head now.
It's actually kind of great.
Listening to audiobooks at 2.5 speed is actually the preferred method by George Lucas because it is faster and more intense. And we love that.
I'm doing it right, I guess.
George Lucas, stamp of approval.
I always struggle with audiobooks because I read absurdly fast. You give me one of those, like any of the Del Rey hardcovers, I'll be done with it in 3 hours or less.
Mm-hmm.
But with audio, I get bored. I zone out. I'm like, I have other things I need to do. And if I'm listening, I have to like put all of my energy to that. So I remember for Dooku Jedi Lost, it took me probably 2 weeks to get through it because I just would, you know, I'd listen to it and then I'd be like, all right, my attention's gone. This one I listened to over 2 days, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I was like, okay, I'll listen to it for 20 minutes. And then I had things to do. And 2 hours later, I was like, oh, I have things to do. Oh no. But yes, I think that like it speaks really, really well to number one, the production quality. And number two, I think Aphra is a much better choice for this medium. Just because for me, listening to her tell the stories of her adventures just worked so much better than Ventress narrating Dooku's journal. And it's just also, like you said, the cast, they were all so good, especially Emily Wuzeller, and especially, I don't have the names on hand, but whoever played Santa and whoever played Triple Zero, they were the real standouts for me. Yeah, Nicole Lewis is Santa and Sean Cannon is Triple Zero. They were amazing.
Yeah, no, Triple Zero was great. I loved when he was impersonating C-3PO at one point in the book, and that was an entertaining twist on that voice, Anthony Daniels. And yeah, just the whole book, I think you really hit the nail on the head for me. I want to kind of talk about the differences between Dooku, Jedi Lost, and Aphra for a minute. Yes, I agree that this worked better, and I almost think of Lando Calrissian in Solo when he's like, Calrissian Chronicles, number one, you know, the shards of whatever he was talking about. And that's the kind of storytelling that's actually really fun. You know, it's that unreliable narrator that you can't necessarily trust everything that they say, but there's also a lot of truth hidden in there at the same time. And it's really their view of the world. No filter whatsoever. In Asajj, even when she's reading Dooku's journals, there is maybe still some unreliability there from how he wrote in those and presents the story to whoever's reading it. But it's really Aphra's voice. It's her as she's experiencing the things around her and the drama and the chaos and the constant back and forth of, hey, recording, delete that prior part. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, hey, recording, encrypt that. You know, actually, recording, I'm going to decrypt that later. It's not a problem for me at all whatsoever. You know, like the funny things that she says throughout that the first time she said it, I was like, wow, she did that. That's great and unexpected and unpredictable. And that's kind of her character in some ways. But Meg, what did you think of this versus Dooku Jedi Lost, kind of what me and Bria were talking about?
Dooku Jedi Lost was kind of like our first experience back in the audio drama stuff. They've done plenty of that before, but the way I kind of look at that is it was really them like testing out like what they could do with it. Because it was all we had, I really enjoyed it. I liked the story. I liked having that backstory, even though Dooku's not like a character that I'm like super needing all that backstory for. But it was still good. Like the production quality was great, the voice acting was great, and all the sound effects and things like that that we're so used to with the audiobooks. But comparing it to Aphra, it makes a difference in the character that you choose. It makes a difference in the way that you tell the story. And the thing about having like the frame story within this one and having her kind of talking to who you don't realize who she's talking to at first, she's just talking to, you know, whoever you don't know until later. But it feels a lot more like a book, as if someone is reading something to you or telling a story to you. And I think for people who aren't as used to listening to fiction, I think that makes it a lot easier than an audio drama where it's more of like, everything is being acted out and you're getting a little bit of narration, but we definitely obviously got a lot more in Aphra because it's her telling the whole story and you just get more like bits and pieces. But because of that, the story was a lot easier to follow. I think I remember listening to Dooku and kind of like spacing out toward the end. So like I had to go back and listen to the rest of it because I was like, this is interesting, but like I kind of am losing track of what's happening. Didn't happen with this one. So I think they're really, this being their second run of an audio drama like this, I think they're really getting a feel for like what works and what's really entertaining to listen to and kind of how to set that all up to make it a really interesting experience. So
mm-hmm. Dooku was pretty packed with a lot of detail as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're dealing with very heavy things like the Jedi, the Sith, Aphra, every single person that's in it feels so distinct where you don't really get lost in all the denseness right. of it. Yeah. And it really kind of had like a natural progression. I think that's why it was very easy to just want to listen to it for long periods of time in a single sitting. And like, I usually wouldn't do that with an audiobook. And like, here I was just sitting in my bed, you know, staring at the ceiling, like, you know, along with Aphra on her journey and like the ridiculousness that ensues. Yeah. But so I want to talk about more of the kind of spoilery stuff and really get into why this book stands out, you know, the framing device, what that exactly entailed, and also the love story that's kind of woven into the fabric of Aphra that I didn't expect would be such a large part of that. And that's because Sarah Keown loves romance. And I was mm-hmm. like, this is the perfect person. This is why she was the perfect person to write this story. So let's start with the romance. Again, spoilers from here on out. So if you haven't read it and don't want to know anything about it, I would advise not listening. But romance, love, and Star Wars. It's so integral to the story, and we get that with Santa Staros. I think as soon as Aphra went into that classroom late and the professor's yelling at her and Santa kind of has her attention directed over towards Aphra, I was like, okay, I'm ready for this romance. This is great already. I love this. I love the college romance of these two classmates. It's great. It's so good. But Bria, what did you think of the framing device of Aphra telling this story to Santa Staros? And within that, we learn more about their romantic past and kind of how later on in the story, Santa hates Aphra. It's like, how do we fall so far? What did you think of the whole storyline?
So I definitely figured out what the twist was there before it happened. Like, I had this inkling about, I think, a quarter or so the way through, where I was just kind of like, she's telling this to someone specific and only one person makes sense here. So I love that. I thought the way they revealed it was really, really well done. Like I sort of hinted at and said before, something that the comic never really got a chance to do was show us when they were in love and when they had strong, positive and romantic feelings about each other, and not, I'm going to punch you in the face feelings, which, valid, Santa, very valid. Aphra's a disaster. But I love how they pulled it off here. You get to, I mean, they're basically what, late teenagers, early 20s, something like that. Mm-hmm. The scene, the second time they meet, where like Aphra falls off a wall. She's like, oh no, she's hot. Oh no. I was like, that is disaster chaos lesbian right there. This is the representation we need. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I thought it was just really, really well done. And Sarah was clearly the perfect author to write this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Meg, what were your thoughts on the romance and the whole framing device and everything?
Loved it. Also saw the twist coming, but you know, that happens. But it didn't make it any less amazing, because you know, when she finally gets to the point where it's revealed that who she's talking to, it just turns so much deeper and so much more beautiful. And she's just like pouring her heart out to Santa. And it's like, this is fantastic. I need all of this forever, please. Aphra is just the kind of person who will just sabotage anything good that ever happens to her. And so, you know, I knew that was coming too. And I knew that, you know, she was going to see this good thing that was happening and say like, nope, like good things, you can't hold on to them because they go away because of all the awful things that have happened to her. And so the whole time they were having all these happy moments, I was like, yeah, but what's going to ruin this? And, you know, think what you will about me when I say that. But they're just, you know, they're both chaotic in their own way, but Aphra is just, you know, she's, you can't hold her down. You can't convince her to do anything that she doesn't want to do. So you're either going to have to follow her across the galaxy, or you're just going to have to watch her walk away. And it's heartbreaking, but, you know, her fault sometimes. So.
Yeah. And there's a lot of tragedy to Aphra's past, right? Because she had this dad who wanted to kind of use her in a way, because she could, you know, crawl in the small places, sort of be the mule, I think Aphra refers to herself as that at one point. And this mom who takes her away to this planet once she's had the final of all final straws. And her mom kind of doesn't necessarily give her the childhood she expected, and she loses her in the process. And it's so tragic to hear about the Raiders attacking their camp. And it's like, you know, she goes on her life thinking, my mom was weak because she, you know, she forged this lasting bond to me, but those bonds don't truly last. So I can't have any sort of feelings for anything, because mm-hmm. they could be taken away, and that's weakness. I got to purge the weakness from my body. And so I think there's this constant back and forth with Aphra, where she's like, I do love these people, but I also have to distance myself because I've seen what it does, and I can't be that vulnerable. I can't be that way. But she recognizes how safe that she does feel with Santa. And that's kind of, it's beautiful, but also tragic in a way. And Star Wars is tragedy. We know this. Yep. what do you think of that, Bria, with Aphra sort of trying to deny this part of herself in a way, and sometimes really miserably failing at it, but other times kind of letting that guard down and letting Santa come in?
I like it because it feels very human and very mm-hmm. real. Between that and then her tendency to self-sabotage and do either the wrong thing or what she thinks is the right thing just for her. I love her. That woman is self-centered and occasionally an idiot, but that's what makes her real. And I think that's why so many people have been able to connect with her and why she's become more than just, oh yeah, she's a dark Indiana Jones. I really love it. It's good.
What do you think ultimately that she's trying to tell Sana? Like, what is kind of the message that she tries to get across, but maybe doesn't quite get there? Like, is there something ultimately that she wants to tell Sana through this story? Like, why does this story need to be told from Aphra's perspective to her former lover? And of course, not until Aphra's dead, because she says, "You will not hear this until I'm dead."
I think probably because, you know, that was clearly the first time they had seen each other in a while. And there was a lot. I think when they first see each other on Grogus Voss, it's very clear that there was unfinished business, that especially on Aphra's part, there were unresolved emotions. And I think that given, I can't remember with the very ending, did they do it set up so she was recording this before or after she went to talk to Palpatine?
Ooh, I can't remember that actually. Yeah, I don't actually remember. That's a great question. That's important too. I think I got lost with the timing there at the end, but
yeah.
I guess it would maybe make sense if she thought that I guess no, because she knew that Darth Vader was going to betray her, right? So it had to have been after, because she kind of was like, oh, of course I knew Darth Vader would do that to me. I was prepared. That's why, you know.
But see, that's the thing.
Krasanti's
there.
She
knew. She had a feeling. But I think also Aphra thought there was a good chance that she could die there too. Mm. Because things don't always go Aphra's way.
They don't.
Nope.
And she did a good job of manipulating Vader with the whole lightsaber thing, but I could have easily seen her. I think even she knew that there was a good chance she could have died there.
She does always think one step ahead, right? And I think that kind of defines her relationship with Vader, because the whole time she's thinking, you know, I got to learn more about this guy and what kind of makes him tick. And eventually I can penetrate that dark armor. And, you know, nobody, I forget exactly what the line is, but she talks about, you know, being that evil and brooding. But she really kind of, in a way, also senses that Vader sees some value in her, unlike her dad. Vader actually sees her as valuable, not just an asset to Vader. She actually thinks, like, I have intrinsic value that somebody recognizes, and that's a great feeling. And that's kind of the defining part of their relationship. And some of the stuff she says to Vader, my God, nobody else would get away with. I mean, you talk about, like, Taji, I think his name is, like, he's talking about, you know, folky religions, and he gets choked right away. Aphra gets away with so much more. And it's just hilarious that she's able. I mean, Darth Vader, I think, just has a soft spot for her because he just loves her.
Yeah, but he still tried to kill her.
Yeah,
Let's not forget that part.
Yeah, no. Still a bad, bad guy.
Tried to kill her multiple times.
You know, I think in the beginning he was kind of like, this person intrigues me. And then by the end he had just had it. And that's kind of the continuing aspect of their relationship currently in the comics, and the sort of always on the run mentality with her, that she, you know, he can't find out she's alive, but then kind of does, and there's a whole thing about it. But their dynamic is really unique in that sense, because they both think they're kind of tricking each other, and I think that's why they work so well together to achieve certain things in the book. But Meg, what did you think of Darth Vader and Aphra, you know, combining their forces to undertake this, you know, larger mission?
Oh, I love the line where he's like, you're overly fond of speaking. He's just like trying to tell her to just shut up. They both know that they can get what they need out of each other. And so, like, as much as they would both probably love to, like, not work together, they're like, I need you, and I'm going to put up with all this so that I can get what I want. And they're both like that. Aphra's very manipulative because she knows that she will do whatever she has to do to get what she wants. Even if that means partnering with Darth Vader, which, why would you do that? I don't know. But yeah, I love their relationship, because, like, you can just tell that Vader is like, I don't know what I'm doing, but, like, whatever. He just goes along with it. I love that. I see a little bit of Anakin in that. So
yeah. I love when he brings her to Tatooine and she's like, we're going to Naboo. Please be Naboo. Please be Naboo. Tatooine? Are you kidding me? What?
That line cracked me up because in the back of my mind, I was like, she's going to go to Naboo though later on.
Yeah, there's some dramatic irony, you know.
But yeah, but I think it's also important to just remember where Vader himself is at this point in the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because much of Kieran's run on, or all the entirety of the run on Vader is him getting himself back in the Emperor's good graces, which we don't necessarily see that angle as much because we're just getting Aphra's side of things. But I think it definitely colors and influences all of his interactions with her because to an extent, she is, in fact, a useful tool. Mm-hmm. And the minute there's a reason why after the Vader Down arc, the minute she got captured, that things, he was prepared.
Yeah.
Just cut, like, don't let anyone know what she knows because Aphra did at that point know too much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's some of the brilliance of this character, right? Think about she probably knows the most important thing in the galaxy, right? And I think that's what makes the story really intriguing because it's like, how do you run from Darth Vader? How do you live that life when you know something he only knows and kills everybody else for that knowledge? And I love those little small moments where she does kind of start to find those little bits and pieces out. Like when you hear Vader speaking to Ben Kenobi or you hear him, I think you hear Luke at one point also speak about feeling his father, and she kind of gets clued into all these different aspects where you do get some of those parts that you were talking about kind of filtering in, but still is largely the Aphra story. So that's what kind of, you know, you got all these different elements kind of combining themselves, and then ultimately we watch the homestead get explode, we watch Ben Kenobi's house get exploded and Aphra goes, goodbye boring beige structure. It's like, great. Another funny line from her, but yeah, that's why I really love that dynamic because they're in two completely different worlds, right? And Aphra doesn't really know. Aphra's just kind of a bystander in a way, watching what's happening with Vader, but also being very actively involved to lead to those discoveries that are happening. It's really great. I love it. In terms of Aphra's motivations and kind of what her MO is, Meg, what do you think? How would you best describe Aphra and what is truly her ultimate goal in life as like a archaeologist who is after these old artifacts and collecting, you know, ancient knowledge and kind of learning some of that from her father, but also not wanting to be as far gone as him and to actually survive and live some sort of life despite the constant betrayals and despite the constant running and backstabbing and all the things that she still does.
She does say at one point that she wants to be powerful and have power. But in addition to that, I mean, there are a lot of layers because we're talking about Aphra. It's just layers upon layers upon layers. She also wants to be remembered for something. She doesn't want to just, you know, dance across the galaxy and just disappear. Like, she's like, I want, you know, to be remembered for doing something, whether that's, nope, never mind. But yeah, she doesn't want to waste her time. You know, she's seen a lot of terrible things. You know, she watched her mother die and it's kind of like, I don't know what that's like, but I can imagine that when something like that happens to you, you're going to think about your life a little bit differently and you're going to kind of say to yourself constantly, you know, does this moment matter? And like, what can I leave behind? And, you know, what does that mean for my future? So
I love the one line where she says, I don't want to be a footnote in a dusty academic text.
Yes. Love it.
I think that is like one of her primary objectives. And I love how she refers to stealing things, not as stealing, but as liberating. there's one point and I'm pretty sure this was an Indiana Jones reference, but she says, who just want to hide things in a museum? It should be in an armory. And that was an Indiana Jones reference because Indiana Jones is like, it should be in a museum. So you got to love a good Harrison Ford callback there. But she really does love this ancient knowledge. Bri, looks like you're about to say something.
Oh, no, I was double checking because I was like, oh, I have the comic right behind me. I know that was a line right from the comic. And then speaking of Han Solo The other bit I really, really love, which is also from Vader Down, is where she's like, oh, Han Solo? Like, oh, have you heard of him? She's like, nope. Who the hell is that? And I thought it was such beautiful lampshading and so perfect.
She says, Solo looks more like a guy in the bar that skips the tab than a hero of the rebellion.
Not inaccurate.
I agree. Yeah, I really think there's this fine balance of survival and chaos. It's like, how far can Aphra teeter in each direction without going like too far where she can't kind of come back to that neutral zone, right? You know, I want to survive, I want to live, but I don't want to live a boring life. She at one point says, why can't I have adventure and like a vacation? You know, I can have both those things. It doesn't have to be one or the other. So her finding that balance is really important to her.
I think the interesting thing though is that she doesn't always teeter back.
Mm-hmm.
I think she thought actually that there was a way she would get out of everything with the Emperor. And like, yeah, she had the contingency plan, but I think she, part of her was hoping that it was going to be enough, but it wasn't. And so then she has to figure out what her new balance is and what she's going back and forth between.
Yeah.
Cause that's one of the really interesting things about the character to me is that she's survived to this point. But there have been a number of times where I was just like, yep, this is it. There's no way she's coming back. And I'll say the end of the original Vader comic was one of them. Like I was convinced she was gone because I know Kieran Gillen's comic book work. And I was worried for a very good reason. But I think that's part of, again, like I said, it's part of what makes her a really good character.
Yeah.
Is she could die at any minute and she doesn't have the hero status to save her like Luke or Leia might in this time frame.
That's a great point. And I mean, if Darth Maul can get his entire lower body chopped off and somehow survive, Aphra can, right? And you're totally right, Bria. We do need more of that in Star Wars where it's like, you know, these characters... The characters that don't have that kind of heroic plating of a Leia or of a Han or of a Luke, like, let's see what they can do. Let's see them kind of come back from one of those worst case scenarios that like Luke could come back from or that Han could get out of, you know? And I think that's what makes Aphra so unique is that she just, like you said, no matter what happens, she finds a way out. And I feel like almost every comic run that I've seen with her, there's some like ridiculous thing that you're like, there's no way. There's just no way. The constant striving for survival, I think, is what keeps her going and wanting to find that next artifact and be involved in that next chaotic battle she's kind of greedy in a way too, right? She loves loves stuff.
Yeah.
She loves collecting stuff. There's a point in the Simon Spurrier comic where there's this like weapon and they're like, come on, Aphra, let's go. And she's like, nope, got to get that, you know? And that's just totally her personality. And at one point she says, if there's a door, I make one. So she doesn't care what the limitations are. She doesn't care what barriers there are. She will plow right through them. And that kind of perseverance and tenacity is a hallmark of like why we love some of these Star Wars characters that we do. In terms of what this character means and like kind of looking at the legacy of Aphra, Bria, I'd love to start with you. And this audiobook, how do you think it truly reshaped what we knew about the character? Because again, it's not just a simple retelling of the comic series, because I think that would just have been boring, but this was very dynamic and it added some new elements to Aphra, especially a voice for Aphra. But what did this book ultimately add to her? How did it kind of shape your understanding of the character, especially being such a huge Aphra fan yourself? And yeah, what's that legacy going to look like for Aphra?
I would say that it didn't necessarily add something new as much as it sort of affirmed or reaffirmed things that I thought I knew about the character or that I had made assumptions about, which is not a dig at Sarah at all. It is only saying good things because she did so well with the character. And it was like, she just reached into my brain and was like, what does Bria want to see about Aphra? If anything though, as far as legacy goes, I think out of universe has larger implications than in universe because it's a new medium. Comic books, for whatever reason, some people just will refuse to pick up a comic, which is fine. I guess. No, you know, not everyone has to read everything. Some people mm-hmm. have trouble reading comics. As a whole, comic books can be a very tricky thing to get into, because if you read anything Marvel, like, there's 600 issues of X-Men and you don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And the more books we get of Aphra, there's now been 3 different ongoing series she's featured in heavily. So people don't know where to start. If they are interested, and some of them aren't. So I think that by having her in the audio drama, and then likely, or at least I'm hoping, they'll do a printed version of the script like they did for Dooku Lost, that opens you. I mean, I don't know for sure. I'm just making
yes, I would love that. No, you're right though. I think that's going to happen.
But that opens up another audience, because again, there's people who don't usually do audio like me. I mean, obviously I will, whatever they do with Aphra, I'll be there. But there'll be people who walk by at a convention like New York Comic Con. They'll be like, huh, who is that? And they'll pick up the book and they'll be intrigued by her. So I think I sort of said this, I believe, on Star Wars Explained, but I think Aphra has the opportunity to become this generation and the canon's version of Mara Jade, as in that character who is only maybe in the books and the comics and such and supplementary material, and maybe never makes it into the movies or on the screen. A lot of fans know who she is, and I think that would be amazing to see, especially for a character of color and a queer character as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the biggest thing about this book, like you said, is accessibility, right? Because for somebody who can't get in the comics, this is just another medium to discover Aphra. And I think the book succeeds at both pleasing the Aphra fans that already know her like the back of their hands, but also saying, hey, if you don't know who Aphra is, this is a great jumping point, because it gets you all the stuff you need to know. And you can honestly jump right into the Simon Spurrier series right after this audiobook if you really wanted to. If you're like, I want to pick up a comic, but I don't want to reread all the stuff I just looked at, so I'm going to just jump right into the next series. Read that, off to Alyssa Wong's series. So I think the more we make Star Wars accessible and not make it feel like you said, you have to read all these things before you can get to X, Y, and Z. You have to read A, B, C, whatever. That's better for the fandom and for people to love Aphra just as much. And like you said, the representation aspect of Aphra is super important, and we need to see more characters like her in Star Wars. Meg, would you agree with Bria's kind of evaluation that she could be like the next Mara Jade in a way? Because I know you're a huge EU fan, especially. You've read a lot of EU. I have read 0 EU, I'm no expert. I know.
Oh, no. We have to fix that. We will fix that, Brad.
It will be fixed.
We'll give you a list.
Speaking of thousands of books to read, I'll get to it.
No, I totally agree. The more accessible that you make this character, the more people are going to discover her. And then that opens the door. I mean, the whole reason, like, my theory with like these audiobooks and audio dramas and things like that is they're testing out which characters are popular enough to make more content for. So the more accessible that they make these stories about these characters also means not only are more people going to discover them, but they're going to make more content about them for more people to discover. The nice thing though, and I'm not saying it has to happen, and it would be okay if it didn't, because what we have right now and what we're going to get like in comics is fantastic, and I need all of it, please, more. What they never got to do with most of Legends is take these characters that everyone loved and transfer them into another medium. Like, you had the comics, but like there were never shows, there were never movies, because that wasn't the focus then. It was all these books were the expanded universe. And what's different now is there are movies and shows, and now we have Disney Plus, which is going to completely change the way that content is made in terms of shows and even like shorts and things like that, because, you know, they can do a lot more. So I think not only could we see her really become this well-known character in comics and maybe even books later, but also the small screen, maybe, if mm-hmm. there's enough interest, and if they can make it work. I mean, Aphra is, I mean, this, all these comics are chaotic. If you can find a way to translate it to that medium, I think it could work. There are people that say it probably wouldn't. I think it would take some work. I think it would be a while if they were going to do that, but it could happen. And I think that would be amazing.
Well, I mean, just look at Marvel, right? They have 5 shows in the works, right? Yeah. So yes, we're getting the Bad Batch. Sure. There's some other shows, Cassian, Obi-Wan, Mandalorian, but why can't we have an Aphra show in the mix? You know, why can't that be a thing? It could, it totally could, right? You know, a 6-episode series even just, it could totally work. And again, it's just like, it's kind of like the marketing machine, right? Because you throw a TV series on there. What is, who is this character from? Go back to all the comics. And it kind of gets everybody invested in all different aspects of Star Wars. And that's kind of a great way to market all of your different mediums. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's ultimately what we want to achieve, right? We want to bring everybody kind of into the fold on all these different, in all these different areas, and kind of have fun. So when we go to conventions, we can talk about Aphra just as easily as we talk about Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker. Like, that should be, Aphra should be at the top of the conversation. She's just so great and I love her. Bria, would you love to see an Aphra series on Disney Plus? I think that would be, I think that would work.
Okay. So actually, if I have my choice of something, if Aphra moving to a new medium, it's a video game.
Oh,
why did I not Tomb Raider think style. Of that?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
please.
Because I think, so the reason I don't necessarily jump to believe the rumors about the TV show, which everyone revitalizes every 3 months, and then everyone comes to ask me who my fan casting is, and I just quietly go, I know. I think that she has been very successful in the written medium and now the audio medium. I'm not sure she's made the breakout point yet. And to be bluntly honest, Star Wars has not gotten to the point where it is shown it is ready to show same-sex relationships on the screen.
I would agree with that assessment completely.
And I mean, I obviously love Star Wars. Haven't gotten there yet, and I really hope we do. But I think that's where we have to get, that between Star Wars and Disney, before they will even consider doing a show with her, because Aphra's a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
I have sources, namely her creator. Like, she's not, you can't, I almost feel like so much of her storyline has involved her sort of relationships first with Sana in this one, and then later on with Magna Tolvan, that if you don't include her romances failed and otherwise, that you're not character justice. And also I kind of wonder what would happen to the comics if we would do a TV series, because so far everything's been fairly linear with her. Like, we've been getting more and more of Aphra's story. Every now and then we'll get a small story that like goes back in time, like the Thakpov one. But Aphra is not the type to live to see the rise of the resistance in the First Order. Like, we don't know that she makes it that far if she does. So where would they set a TV series? Mm-hmm. And if they do that because of production schedules, what does the comic do, which is on a very different production schedule? Whereas with a game, you can just set that anywhere.
Yeah.
There you go.
It would be great.
No, I think a Tomb Raider style game would work. Tomb Raider is probably one of my favorite video games I've played in the last decade or so, 5 years. But I think the archaeology open world games are always a ton of fun. And Aphra, you could still bring back Emily Wu Zeller. I don't know if she does video game acting, but she could definitely do the voiceover. I mean, it's kind of no different in some ways. But no, you're totally right. I think there does absolutely needs to be made progress in representing, you know, LGBTQ plus representation on screen, because that's just clearly not there. You can't call a 2-second kiss in the Rise of Skywalker representation, right? That's not the greatest claim to that. And those two things can be true at the same time. There can be a need for that, and I also still love Star Wars, you know. I think that's when we love something, we want to see changes in it so it can be even better. And Aphra, I think, is kind of at the forefront of that. She represents everything that we could be doing better. And the more that we include her in the mediums, I think we'll see more of her the likes of her character spring up around the galaxy, because we just need more stories than just the Skywalkers and all that, you know.
Yes.
And we need to expand our horizons and not just revisit the things that are familiar. And I think Aphra represents that. And I was actually very pleasantly surprised we went with this book to kick off the summer, or end the summer, I guess, midsummer. So I want to ask each of you, from looking at this audiobook, what was your favorite moment? I know there's quite a bit, and I'm definitely not going to go first because I still need to think about this one.
I also need to think about it.
So I'm going to go with Bria first, because she is jumping out of her seat. She is ready. I love it.
So I love that there were so many different lines that like were just picked up wholesale from the comic. Like there was a bunch that just always stick with me. But the moment we first heard Vader say Dr. Aphra, I got chills. It just made me happy. I'm like, my girl is real.
Yeah.
Darth Vader said her name with his voice.
It's canon. Like, it's canon now.
What? I mean, it was always canon before, yeah. But there's just something about hearing Vader say in that very specific voice with that, you know, breathing, even if it's two and a half times, Dr. Aphra. I was giddy.
Yeah. It's a solid moment. Again, their interactions are so great. Meg, do you have a favorite moment that you can think of off the top of your head?
I think everything on Naboo. Pretty dark, obviously, but there's a lot going on with Padme right now in the expanded universe. We're just getting a lot more of her story, especially like after she's gone a little bit. So that really intrigued me because I think it's all setting something up. Don't know what, but it was interesting to, because we know what happened to her, obviously, but Aphra doesn't. And so we're kind of watching her like try to discover what happened and put these pieces together. And that really interested me a lot.
Yeah, the Padme stuff, I think there was at one point Aphra gets kind of so enamored with Padme. I think the hollow image of her, and she kind of senses this spark of hope in Padme. She's like, how does this woman I've never met, how is she so hopeful? I don't get it. You know, and that is kind of a cool light bulb moment for Star Wars fans, because they're like, we know Padme's backstory, and you're kind of seeing it discovered through the eyes of Aphra for the first time. Yeah. And that's a really cool feeling. For me, I would really like, when all the characters kind of come together. I forget what the issue is called for the comics, but it was that big special issue where kind of all the different comic series collided, where you had like the
Vader Down.
Yes, that's what it was. You had Star Wars comic, you had the Vader comic kind of clashing heads, and it was like all coming to this epic battle. And I loved hearing BT and R2-D2 scream at each other in the background as all these crazy noises are happening. And I'm like, wow, R2 is just so cute. His gurgling is just the best. And the Wookiees going at each other was just also a lot of fun. The Wookiee impression like was not totally up to stuff for me, but I was still enjoying it very much.
Yeah.
And just some of the banter again between Han and Aphra. And I think at one point they're taking cover from like a falling debris, and they're kind of with each other, and they both realize they both screwed up and they're trying to outsmart each other, but it's not quite working. So just seeing all these characters come together and hearing all the different voices, such a dynamic scene, really well edited, and just a lot of fun, just a lot of Star Wars fun. I would love to see, I think my final thoughts would be, I would love to see more in this medium. I hope we get one of these per year. I hope we see, again, more of Aphra. I hadn't thought of the video game medium, but now that I've heard it, I want it. And yes. I think you might be right in that I might want that more than a TV show, because if I can actually interact with the character and see her on my television screen and still go on this journey with her, that'd be really awesome. And there's a lot of potential there. There's a lot of potential with this character, and the archaeologists in the Star Wars universe will never go away. They'll always be around, and I love that. And I can't wait till she meets her like true adversary one day that's also an archaeologist, and they kind of clash heads. That'd be kind of a fun storyline. I don't know if there's been any of those just yet, but there's a lot of comics coming down the line as well. And Alyssa Wong's comic series is really great. So if you haven't read it, also excellent, because great continuation of Aphra.
I think the only thing I've got is that I would love to see Sarah Kuhn do more with Aphra, mm-hmm. whether it's in this medium or it's her writing a book, or heck, Disney Lucasfilm, the people who do the YA books, please just hire Sarah to write an entire Aphra and Zana YA novel.
There you go.
Like, that would be amazing.
That would be so good.
Like, just have, you know, or even if Zana's not there, like, she goes to college, and it's, you know.
The Disney Lucasfilm YA books have done such a good job with romance, because you look at Lost Stars and Crash of Fate. Like, those are two in my recent memory that I can think of that were just so convincing. And yeah, I think that's maybe the next best thing would be a full-fledged book just centering on that romance written by Sarah. I would love that. That's a great idea. Sarah, if you're listening, or Disney Lucasfilm, if you're listening, please Give it to us. I'll buy 4 copies of it, please.
If you haven't read any of Sarah's other books, you really, really should. She did I think it was a trilogy called Heroin Complex. It's really so much fun. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I have to check that out. I haven't read that yet, but I know I think you just did some recent ones as well, like a Halloween themed one or.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was like a novella that just came
out. Yeah. So there's a lot she's doing. She's booked and busy, but let's keep her booked and busy in Star Wars as well. Cause she's a fantastic addition to the author lineup. Meg, do you have any final thoughts on Dr. Aphra, the audio drama?
I definitely agree that there should be more stories in this medium. I think one per year is like the perfect amount, because we have a lot of other stories constantly coming in, like more so now than ever. So you don't want to like overdo it. But I think as much as I would love more Aphra in this medium, and I think there should be more eventually, they should take more characters that are lesser known in the wide, you know, fan base and like do audio dramas for them. If this is like going to be something that introduces more people to Aphra, as it should, and I hope it does. You know, I can't think of any examples right now of who would be a good fit for something like this, but I definitely think they should do that.
Janna.
Yeah. Yes. There you go.
That's I want my Janna book. Please.
Yeah, please. I need that story. Like, how can you just give like that 5-second story and then just leave it there? Don't do that to me.
I would love the
Star Wars
Stormtrooper Rebellion from Janna's perspective. That would be a fun book.
Please. We need it.
Oh, you could do some neat stuff with that.
Yeah. It'd be really fun. I think you hit the nail on the head, Meg. You know, more about the characters we don't know too much about. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just about expanding our horizons and taking some risks, and also not even risks, just really opening up just making Star Wars even more fun, because there's just so many involved characters, and even something like From a Certain Point of View shows that there's 40 different really weird tertiary characters that we're gonna go crazy for, and then we're gonna be like rabidly talking about and dissecting on Twitter. And like, if that doesn't tell you that there's a market for secondary characters, especially, and not just, you know, the legacy ones, that's your proof right there, right? You can do pretty much anything with Star Wars. Make it interesting, make it fun, make it good, and I will read it and I'll enjoy it. And I think that's part of what this audiobook shows. I think that's pretty much it for Dr. Aphra. So I had a lot of fun doing this conversation and talking more about it. Again, I'm not an Aphra expert. This book really did grow my appreciation for the character more than I thought it could. And I'm so excited that we got this. So thank you both so much for joining me and talking about the audiobook today. It was a lot of fun. To close out the show, let's start with you, Bria. Where can our listeners find you online, and what do you got coming up that you'd like to talk about?
Let's see. Essentially, I write reviews over for Tashi Station, which is tashistation.net. I contribute occasionally to starwars.com. And then I am on Twitter and Instagram at Chaos Bria, where it is 90% screaming about video games, namely Dragon Age and Fire Emblem Three Houses. I am not sorry. You have been warned.
Amazing. And Meg, what about you? Where can our listeners find you, and what do you have going on right now?
You're going to make me narrow it down, aren't you? I'm writing a lot for Dork Side of the Force right now, about everything, mostly about books and comics, but, you know, a lot about those characters and anything that I can write about. I got to write about Captain Phasma today, and it made my day. Also, mostly where you're probably going to find me right now is at utini.com. And speaking of Aphra, if you are interested in figuring out what she's in terms of comics, where you can find her, which stories to read about her, we do reading collections over there. So what we'll do is we'll take like a character and list out every story that they appear in. So you can go to one page and it's, here's everything that you've ever seen Aphra in, including From a Certain Point of View is also in there. But if you're interested in all of the things that I'm doing, the easiest place to find everything that I'm doing is at Magdell on Twitter. I post on there way too much. I need to stop that. But yeah, so if you're interested in, it's mostly Star Wars now, let's be honest. So that's what you'll find pretty much if you are there. So yeah.
And as for here at Friends of the Force, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and you can also consider joining our Patreon at patreon.com/friendsoftheforce. Thank you to Amy, Anna, Deborah, Ella G, Cheryl, Donnie, Marie Claire, Michael, Neil, Rachel, and T. And we also have a huge event coming up in just about a week and a half, 2 weeks. It's Remembering Resistance Day on August 29th. So if you are a Star Wars Resistance fan, we are going to be spreading that hashtag Remembering Resistance all day long. It's going to be so much fun. There's a ton of interviews coming out and a panel that's going to be happening. We're going to be talking so much about Resistance and remembering this show that came and went way too quickly. So stay tuned for all those exciting announcements that are coming soon. But Bria, Meg, thank you once again for being a friend of the Force today. I'm so happy to have had you. And until next time, everybody, may the Force be with you always.
Friends of the Force is a proud member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. To learn more about our sister shows, find us on Twitter at @WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom.